I cannot, for the life of me, put myself through the process of re-editing my PhD thesis, no matter how small the edits may be, because this is painful. The very fact that I have to put myself through a process with a publishing house, changing this thing in order for it to be published, to then produce a token of my own pain and trauma that I will then probably also have in my office and at home. No, I'm not going to do this.
Welcome to the first episode of the Unconditional Teaching podcast. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Jessica Koch, Tilsi Bura and me, Katharina Peach. Together we write articles and record interviews in which we investigate how we can create healthier relationships in learning and teaching. In this episode, Till and I talk to Jessica about her experience of writing and defending her PhD thesis and the severe strain both put on her mental health. Because we had so much to talk about, this episode is split in two parts. In this first part, Jessica talks about how writing and defending her PhD thesis was a traumatic experience for her, and how the contradictory narratives around the PhD in academia create a state of cognitive dissonance that produces a lot of distress. We also talk about the conflicting demands of publishing the PhD thesis that come after writing and defending it, and last but not least, why Jessica doesn't want a published copy of her PhD anywhere near her. Jessica, you recently defended your PhD thesis, and the week before that, you did a rehearsal of that defense, to which you invited a couple of colleagues and friends of yours because you wanted to rehearse the defense to try out your presentation and to maybe have us ask some questions and give you feedback, and do that with friends and colleagues who were supportive towards you. Because, and you made that very clear, doing the defense was a really hard thing for you, that it was emotionally taxing for you, and you even used the word re-traumatization. You said that having to go through the thesis defense felt like you were being re-traumatized. Using a term like this for a thing like a thesis defense might seem overly dramatic, but I know that you have very good reasons for using such a dramatic term. So when you talked about it like this, I was instantly thinking, why are you using such a dramatic term? How did this experience actually feel like to you? Why did you use this word?
I think in order to answer this question, why the thesis defense felt like I was re-traumatizing myself, or I was subjecting myself to re-traumatization, I do think I need to talk about where the trauma comes from in the first place, and why I'm continuing to use the word trauma in this context of my PhD thesis and the defense. When I started writing the PhD thesis, I don't think I had a very good idea about what this would mean in terms of my own well-being, my mental health, and generally my state of existence, as it were. I do think that although I had written large papers or larger papers before, committing to a research project for 3 to 4 years, it turned out to be 4 years, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And the way these projects are being spoken about didn't really help, I think. I think there are discourses around in German academia, at least, that suggest to PhD students two things at the same time. They suggest that these types of texts, these PhD theses, are on the one hand like the one magnum opus, they're the big book, the one thing that you will become known for, essentially. This was the way in which a lot of friends from academia, but also people I was working with, talked about. So this will be the topic you will become known for. This will be your thing, essentially. And that comes with a lot of political decisions that need to be made. Do you really want to be, in my case, do you really want to be known for being the one who wrote a PhD thesis on professional wrestling? So that's the one discourse that is around. The other discourse is around, or is shaped by the knowledge that very few people will actually read PhD thesis or the first book in the German context. What people will engage with are oftentimes the journal articles, the shorter essays, the chapters from essay collections that you produce as a researcher. So a lot of colleagues and friends from academia and people I met at conferences told me, look, the PhD thesis is not as important as the later output, the smaller things that you will work on, because these are the things that essentially people will actually read. Mm-hmm. So the PhD thesis is nothing but, so went the narrative, is nothing but you showing that you're capable of participating in academic discourse. And the issue that, or one of the many issues that I had with these two conflicting types of narratives is that I believe that they're both true and both wrong at the same time. And there's no way of resolving this for the individual who's trying to write a PhD thesis in German academia. So I felt like in the thesis defense, when I was in the thesis, when I was writing the PhD thesis, I was in this constant state of cognitive dissonance. And that was, apart from some other things that that happened to me during my PhD thesis, this produced a continued state of distress. I looked at a few definitions for what trauma means in a psychological context, and one of the definitions that pops up is that psychological trauma, in essence, is an individual experience, a unique experience of an event or of enduring conditions in which individuals are incapable to integrate their emotional experiences into their own life narrative, in essence. And I think this is what happened to me. I put myself through a four-year process of traumatizing myself and letting myself be traumatized by a system that isn't very good at making requirements clear and assisting, essentially, what should be, I think, a growth process. And when I went into the thesis defense or the preparation phase for the thesis defense, I realized that I'm doing this again, essentially, just on a different scale. I'm not writing, but I'm preparing something. I'm preparing a big talk. And that, in essence, produced similar cognitive dissonances. So, for instance, the idea that on the one hand, people keep telling you this is not an exam, this is just a formality. At the same time, there are forms out there and regulations that explicitly state this is an exam and this has certain requirements and certain regulations and certain structures that need to be abided. And if you constantly hear these two conflicting narratives, this is bound to mess with your mind. It certainly did with mine.
Yeah. I think this applies to a lot of things that students in general, whether it be BA students or PhD students and everyone in between, goes through at university. I think that this is a system which puts people into contradictory subject positions all the time. Think about how on the formal level, grades and Studienleistung at Bielefeld University at least, are the only thing that the transcript, so the tangible result of your studies recognizes and records. So on the one hand, students are being told by the system, this is what matters here. But when you take these things seriously and when you worry about requirements for a Studienleistung, for instance, and communicate this worry to your teachers and supervisors, they
they got offended sometimes because they want students to be intrinsically motivated and not worry about formalities and about grades, because it's really, this is about education. This is about being intrinsically motivated to become a scholar and not worrying about formalities so much. So this is one of the many, many, I think, examples of how this system constantly puts these conflicting expectations and ideas and concepts on students and puts them into positions where they have to deal with these things. And especially because the power hierarchies are still very steep at university, I think the way I think about this, for me, it makes perfect sense that a lot of the mental health issues we are seeing in students are symptoms of them having to deal with these conflicts. And that you mentioned cognitive dissonance makes perfect sense, because this is, of course, one of those psychological terms that's being used for causes or factors that cause psychological or mental distress. Yeah. Mm.
I think it's super important to keep in mind that these cognitive dissonances are not just an inverted commas, an academic problem, in a sense of that they are purely theoretical or logical issues that need to be resolved via, you know, changing regulations or something like that. But the way in which these regulations that are meant to test your academic and intellectual prowess, I'm using this in inverted commas, are meant to work, I think they have inscribed in themselves a strong tendency to produce effects that lead to mental health issues. And I must say, I realized this really, really late. I totally bought into the idea that this was a matter of me showing resilience, me showing strength, and to basically work my way through this. There's a lot of discourses involved that have to do with wasted potential. You know, you have to do this to unfold your true academic potential, and we want you to succeed in this and all of this. And I wrote about this in one of the entries on the webpage. And because of these narratives, I realized relatively late that what I was feeling was actually dangerous. That the way in which I was meant to be tested with this PhD thesis and later on with the defense put me in a state of mind that that was so dangerous to not only my sanity but also my life. Essentially, I became very, very depressed. And right before the thesis defense, this I think was the most obvious to me, because in the weeks leading up to the thesis defense, after I thought I had the worst things completed, so handing in the PhD thesis, I thought, you know, I'm done now. The rest is going to be a walk in the park. And then this feeling of depression slowly crept back, and I felt bitter and angry. And then at the same time, I was so drained of energy. I was really, really empty. And in the 2 days before my defense, I was just numb. I was just really, really numb. And that scared me so much, because I'm a very lively person. I talk a lot, I feel a lot, I cry a lot, I laugh a lot. That's who I am. And these 2 or 3 days of absolute numbness, of not being able to feel anything, that's so unlike myself. And I recognize it, because I was already in therapy then. I recognized this as a resurgence of my depression. And this is where I thought, okay, this is actually me re-traumatizing myself. This is me doing the same thing again to myself that I already did over the last 4 years. And it was so important to me to acknowledge that and to then say, okay, I need to remember this, and I'm never going to do that again, because it's so dangerous.
I mean, we talked about this before a little, that part of the pressure is a systemic and fundamental contradiction between two signals, being a scholar on the one hand and being an examinee on the other hand. And especially in the German discourse, I think this is especially strong because you are accomplished, you're done, you're finished, basically, in your scholarship once you have a tenured professorship. Then you're sort of your lifelong professor. You can't be fired. You earn much more money than you've ever earned before. You have a secure job. All the time before, you're an examinee. This is not the case in the Anglo-American context where you do your PhD and then you find a job and it's not tenured at the beginning, but you can work toward it and you're worth something doing that job. You're a scholar, you've published your book, and then you do more scholarship and you're recognized for that. In Germany, it's not quite that way. It's much more harsh in a sense, because at every step of the way, everything you do is part of qualifying for being a professor. Of course, not everyone becomes that professor.
Very, very few indeed become.
Yeah, very few become ever reach that state. So your scholarship is always deferred in a sense behind your identity as someone who is being tested, whose intellectual prowess, as you said in inverted commas, has to be proven again and again and again with every article and so on. And I think for people who have a strong sense of integrity, of dignity, of the need to feel worthy, this can be violating. This can be sort of hurtful. It wounds them. I think it wounds everyone in the end, because you can never be sure whether what you do, the scholarly output that you produce, is worth something on its own, or whether it's just another step to some piece of the title that you can then use to be worth something.
Yeah, I think there are several things in here that I think I would like to comment on. The first thing is that there is a problematic relationship between one's identity as a scholar and the scholarship that one does, the academic work that one does, that I do, and myself as an intellectual and academic, a scholar, whatever you want to call it. We usually in academia and also in the hard sciences, we subscribe to this idea that we are always criticizing ideas, that when we enter into scientific or academic discussion with one another, that what we're talking about are not people, but we're talking about ideas. And we're discussing ideas in order to figure out which ideas are valid and which ideas are not valid. However, when you actually observe how academic conduct in these discourses works, as a young scholar, at least this was the case for me, I quickly realized this is not at all how people practice academic scholarship. Academic scholarship has a lot to do with identity. Mm. It has a lot to do with ego. It has a lot to do, and you're being invited to associate yourself with your scholarship. One of the first questions that I was asked by a very high-ranking scholar in my field of studies when I started my PhD project was, do you want to be the person who wrote their PhD thesis on professional wrestling? Mm. And I didn't understand that question at that time. And it took me some time to realize, no, okay, this has something to do with the politics of identity in academia, the connection between one's own scholarship and one's identity. And I do think there is merit to separating these two. I also think there's merit to having a close relationship between the two. We cannot disassociate ourselves from the politics that are involved in our own work, particularly not when we're dealing with topics like gender and race and ethnicity and age and ageism, these sorts of things. However, I do think in the context of being examined constantly, this becomes a huge issue, because how can we make a point about this actually being about testing of academic and intellectual prowess when at the same time we basically argue that whether or not you make it is a matter of resilience, for instance. I think this is one of the major issues that I think I have this idea of. On the one hand, we put forward the idea that we are testing you for whether or not you are able to participate in an academic discourse as a scholar, not as a person, not as a private person. Simply, we're testing your skills. On the other hand, it has something to do with your psychological makeup, your resilience, your stamina. And that's one other cognitive dissonance, particularly when it comes to the thesis defense, when you actually have to engage and talk to people. And it doesn't matter how nice the people are to you. I mean, I had very, very nice examiners who were like super friendly, and I had fun, they had fun in the main defense. But that didn't have any bearing on whether or not this was a painful experience, because the pain does not necessarily come from whether or not you're being treated well, but comes from the very makeup and from the very framework, the discursive framework of these tests. And the second thing that I would like to briefly comment on is this sense of a lack of a lasting accomplishment. This is what strikes me the most about this whole thing. You work for 3, 4, 5 years sometimes on a project, and you produce this long text. And I think most PhD students are actually, I hope at least, are proud of the idea that they put forward, of the scholarship that they do. But even before we hand in this paper, more accomplished or more experienced researchers who already have their PhD, who may have a position as a professor already, will ask questions that have nothing to do with the PhD thesis, but with what comes after the PhD thesis. I was being asked very, very early on at conferences, at German conferences, about what I planned on for my second book, so the requirement for becoming a professor. And I was completely confused by that question. First of all, because I realized relatively quickly that I wouldn't want to aim for a professorship in the German academic context. And secondly, because I was still in the early phase of my PhD thesis, I wasn't even considering anything else yet. And then also these questions of, but what positions can you actually work towards with this type of PhD? What is the next step after you've handed this in? And the day I handed in my PhD thesis, and then again on the day when I completed the thesis defense, I realized that I could wait till kingdom come and there wouldn't be a sense of accomplishment, because the moment I have the PhD, it's meaningless again, because then again I'm a rookie in a field full of rookies, full of people who have a PhD. And for the system, the next logical step is always do more, work more, new project, new money, new output, instead of providing any sense of relief, of accomplishment for the people who've worked years and years and years on their projects. I'm not saying become complacent or something like that, or stop working on academic ideas, but there is really nothing. It feels like there is nothing that can give you a sense of awesome, you did something like that. I have to go outside of my academic context to find any sort of acknowledgement. People outside of academia are much, much more inclined to give me a sense of, okay, this was actually a cool thing that I did. In academia, it's a brief clap on the back and one day of drinking coffee and talking and handshaking. And after that, it's business as usual. Mm. And the structure in German academia reflects that. It's very anticlimactic. You have this big day of handing in your thesis, then you have a few weeks' time, then you have this big day of your thesis defense, and then you have a few more months, sometimes years, of reworking your PhD thesis for publication. And that's very much without fanfares. Yeah. So it's so weird. I don't think I fully understand what happened to me during that time. I don't think I will ever understand fully what this did to me. But I get the inkling that these weird setups that are built into the systems leave us vulnerable to work ourselves into a bad shape.
Can I comment just very briefly on the publication thing? Not only is it without fanfare, but it's also attached or laden with a lot of additional demands that are extraneous to the actual scholarly work you've done. So even questions like, with what publisher do you publish? Is it a good publisher? Do you publish it just to have it published? What does the publisher say? How long can it be? What do you have to cut? How do you have to rework it? There's no acknowledgement of the work you've done, but only more demands of reworking what you already did into a state where it is politically opportune, where it is well publishable in a certain series, where it fits in the economic or in the marketability of a certain publishing brand and so on. I think this is an alienating experience on top of that. And then it takes years and years to actually publish it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very good point. You have very conflicting demands between what academia wants. I produced a very short PhD thesis with a bit more than 200 pages. Like, this is already on the lower end of the scale. But at the same time, something that goes beyond 230, 250 pages cannot be published in most Anglo-American publishing houses because they won't be bought because they're too long. So the German Ladenhüter idea. So these are two very, very conflicting demands. And I do know of a lot of scholars who wrote their PhD thesis or even their second books, the Habilschrift, that were relatively long when they handed them in for grading or for acceptance by their peers, that had to be reduced significantly, sometimes by 50% in order to be published. And that's something that I find just very weird. And yes, it puts extra demands on us. And then the extra pressure of having to publish with a prestigious publishing house is something that I find, well, it puts a lot of emotional pressure on me. It certainly put a lot of emotional pressure on me. I decided very early on that I would not publish with a publishing house, but I would rather put it on our university library webpage for two reasons mainly. One of them has to do that with the fact that I'm very pro open access anyway. So anyone who wants to have access to my PhD thesis can have access to my PhD thesis. So that makes sense. But the more important reason for me was that I cannot, for the life of me, put myself through the process of re-editing my paper, no matter how small the edits may be, because this is painful. It's painful. It's not that I have to cut bits out or change bits or add bits. That's not the important bit here. But the very fact that I have to put myself through a process with a publishing house, changing this thing in order for it to be published, to then produce a token of my own pain and trauma that I will then probably also have in my office and at home. No, I'm not going to do this. And I actually know of several other people that I've met and talked about who went the same way and said, no, I'm not going to do this, this long, strenuous road trying to publish this with a publishing house because this will take months, maybe years to do so. I will simply use the university website, do it there, that's much faster, and then I'm finally done with this and I can move on with my life. And I'm getting emotional just talking about this right now, because this decision hurts, because there's still constant pressure from all sides, even very, very friendly pressure saying, look, but this is a good thesis, why don't you want to publish it with a publishing house, we have this cool thing here, or why don't you ask there? And it's all fantastic suggestions, except for the fact that I'm still raw and emotionally drained and I don't have the energy to do that. And it's would further hurt me. So these are very, very tough decisions. And I don't think that every PhD student has the energy or the mental capacity at that point in time to resist offers to publish somewhere else, even with the knowledge that this will hurt them more.
Yeah, I would like to ask about this connection between, well, accomplishment and why doesn't it feel like an accomplishment to you? Because having to just jump through another set of hoops, that is the publishing process and revising the PhD thesis and so on, this is only part of the whole picture, right? Because when you have gone through something like this traumatizing process and writing it, what does the actual outcome, the actual product then mean to you?
I think that's a very good question. I always try to phrase it like this, or to frame it like this. The idea of, or the things that I did there, the argument, the analysis, the interpretations of my primary materials and the theoretical work that I did, that's what I'm proud of. I'm the most proud of this when I get to talk about it to other people. That's when I realize how much traction my ideas have, because then I can see in the reaction of other people which things work and which things don't. Now, I do realize that academic communication has a lot to do with writing, because we can't possibly talk to other people we would like to talk to. It's just not possible. So writing is necessary and very important. And I do like my text. I do like the text that I produced. I know which bits are super good. I know which bits are not so good. I know which bits I'm super proud of, and I know which bits I don't like. But it is the product that I was capable of producing at that point in time. And I think I need to acknowledge this as exactly what it is. Now, with the product as a graded item, as it were, that's where it becomes more complex. That's where I have difficulty looking at this thing. Because, first of all, there is this difference between the version of the paper that is being graded, for which I'm being awarded the title, the PhD title, and the version that everybody else will get to read once I publish this thing. So I'm... The grade I receive for a paper that in actuality is not finished yet, because it goes through yet another revision process. And that in itself is weird. Yeah. That in itself gives me a feeling of conflict, really. And then the finished product, say if I were to publish this with a publishing house and I actually... received a copy of my, or several copies probably, of my book, I do think that it would only serve as a token of this struggle, a token of this trauma that I went through. And that's why I'd rather go for an electronic version, because I do not have to look at this thing as this graded product that is being given to the system in order for me to receive the PhD. I don't have to look at this anymore. I still want to look at my ideas. I still want to talk about my ideas, but I don't want to look at this again in the context of me being an examinee and me subjecting myself to such torture. It has a lot to do with complicity. I am, of course, complicit. Partly because I ignored what was happening to me, and partly because I was being made complicit by the system. It's basically you're constantly being lured in with rewards and all of that. And once you have your PhD, you know, you're done, except you're not. But we already discussed that. So, yeah.
When you say lured in with reward, I think for many people who begin their PhD work, the feeling of freedom of ideas, of the investigative spirit of science is real. So it's not just a lure, it's not just a promise, but it is a passion project, and it as it should be on the one hand. But again, on the other, there's so much contradiction to the entire project, and the more and the longer you do it, the more experience you get, the more you see through the charade that parts of that process also are.
I do agree, partly at least. I do think, yes, it often starts off as a passion project, particularly in the humanities. I think we have, oftentimes we have a lot more freedom to choose our own projects. I don't think that's true for a lot of the MINT subjects, for instance, where the practice is often to hand out or to ask students whether or not they would like to participate as PhD students in a certain project. With us, this is obviously often different. So that's one caveat that I would make. What I meant by being lured in is we want to do these passion projects. We have ideas, for instance, and then we are basically being promised, yes, you can do such a passion project, and you do this under our conditions. You do this under the conditions of the system academia. You do this under the conditions of the system university. And then the moment I agree to this, without knowing it or not, I certainly didn't know that, but the moment I agree to this, I also agreed to the every other demand that comes with doing this in this system. And I did this because it was supporting my livelihood to some extent. So I was super flattered and so honored as a super young student at the end of my master's to be approached by researchers who said, look, would you like to work as a PhD student and write your PhD thesis in one of our projects? And I was young and I didn't know that what I was doing to myself was a bad idea. I wasn't in the right frame of mind. And I was just so flattered, and I thought, yes, I can write a book and I'm being paid for it. That's amazing. That's so cool. And it is. Except it also isn't, because it means that time is short. Doing this in 3 years is tough, particularly because you're also working on other things. Academia as a whole requires you to put out other articles, to do teaching.
Speak at conferences,
exactly. Participate in other projects, participate in university politics, and so on and so forth. And you're essentially doing a lot of things at the same time. And this doesn't let up as time goes on. I mean, professors in particular feel that pressure. They're meant to do everything all the time at the same time. And for some reason, it's just assumed that this is normal, that this is the price you need to pay in order to get the PhD. Nobody tells you, however, nobody at least told me, that the PhD is not the end to the suffering or something like that. It's just, you know, you have to get there in order to get somewhere else, to then maybe get to the point where you can have a permanent position, where you will probably work yourself into a burnout. So the whole system is just weird, and I find very inhumane. It demands, the academic system as it is now, demands an inhuman amount of work and dedication of people. And it requires people to associate themselves completely and utterly with their work. And I do think that this is dangerous and unhealthy.
Thanks for listening. This is the end of the first part of this interview. In the second part, we talk about the genderedness of discourses of resilience and suffering, and why it is so difficult to acknowledge traumatic experiences when you are pursuing an academic career. Finally, Jessica tells us more about how she exercised agency to create her actual PhD defense as a situation of security and support for herself by inviting students, colleagues and friends. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Tulsi Bura, Jessica Koch and me, Katharina Peach. Music by Lily Olason. If you want to know more about our project and our partners, check out unconditional-teaching.com. Do you like our content or would like to engage with us? Head over to our comment sections or contact us via team@unconditional-teaching.com.